Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Brian McLean on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, everybody. Great conversation with Joe Hoft there from the Gateway Pundit. Very pleased to have Joe here at today's News Talk with us at tntradio.live. Remember, he is live between 2 and 3 Eastern Standard Time. So let's see here. Chesty Puller, United States Marines, quote, "All right, they're on our left. They're on our right. They're in front of us. They're behind us. They can't get away this time. Only in politics could 2022 players be surprised by the innovation of a mail-in ballot-led strategy, exactly the same as was used in 2022. If more than 20 million people watched Dinesh D'Souza's documentary, 2,000 Mules, why didn't candidates prepare for phantom voters? People are really stupid. In 2020, Democrats set up corner mail-in ballot drop boxes, harvested thousands of floating ballots, and live, on videotaped, dropped them off at ballot gathering stations. In 2022, only the Republican Party, truly the stupid party, could be caught flat-footed with its opponents doing exactly the same thing, exactly the same way, at full scale, on video again. It is exasperating to listen to the moaning in Arizona, where the Maricopa County election fraud factory did precisely the same thing in 2022 as it did in 2020, stealing an election from a group of promising candidates. They even had their candidate skip debates the way Joe Biden did, hiding in her basement. Let's ask the question nobody is asking. Why were candidates spending millions on ads and organizations while ignoring the work of cleaning up the voter rolls? The Democrat leftist ballot strategy has one absolute must-have ingredient: floating ballots. A floating ballot is the one that goes to 434 Prescott Street for Bill Jones, but the address is an apartment building, so it cannot be delivered because it does not indicate that Bill is in unit 34. That free floating ballot is collected by someone and eventually voted. This happens in almost every state, in about every multi-unit building. We saw it in as many states in 2020 and 2022. In 2022, innovative Republican candidates of very few mailed postcards to every voter in their congressional district. The cards that came back equal non-deliverable address. They challenged ballots sent to these addresses, and perhaps they sent volunteers to find some of those accumulated ballots. We know a voter integrity team in Georgia working from their kitchens doing similar analysis. People, this isn't hard. This isn't expensive. This is mandatory. Find the phantoms. Why do we not see every political campaign have an outreach to identify phantoms and stop the ballot harvesting? Well, here's a clue. The Republican organizations are as into keeping phantoms on the voter rolls as the Democrat leftists. Don't believe me? Mike Lindell hired us to work with the voter integrity team in Wisconsin right after 2020's election. Sheriff David Clark called me when I was in Tucson and asked if we would apply for fractal programming, which is described at omega4america.com, to voter rolls. Lindell is as colorful in real life as he is selling pillows on television, and he's equally passionate. Let me take you there. Mike called me at 8 p.m. asking me to run the voter rolls for one of the reddest states. The next morning, I had to present the voter roll phantoms to its security of to its Secretary of State via a Zoom call. I had 2 hours to find at-scale phantom voters in one of the reddest states and present them to a group of 20 lawyers after my first cup of coffee the following morning. It wasn't hard. Voters registered in prison, people voting from homeless shelters for 20 years, Homeless shelters do not have 20-year residents. Don't email me about this. Active voters in a frat house who were 106 years old, and a voter who was 1,900 years old who registered to vote just before the 2020 election. The response from this Republican Secretary of State was complete denial. No matter how crazy the phantom's address was, like a jail, he refused to concede that there was any phantom inhibition of his state's voter rolls. We now run about 20 states, and they are all like this. Phantom voter fraud is the heart and soul of ballot harvesting, election stealing. If we eliminate phantom voter fraud, people will still screw with the machines. Maricopa County will make sure its voting machines do not work in Republican precincts, but the fake ballot harvesting at scale will end. It's where the big votes are. Election fraud is an industry. It is core to the fabric of both Democrat and Republican establishments. So there you go. That is up there at Gateway Pundit. It's by Joe Hoft, and it's a guest post by Jay Valentin, reprinted with permission from The American Thinker. So if you want to get into that one a little bit further, get on up there and go find it, share it around. All right. So are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio? Do you think we're doing a good job? Please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review on one of the social platforms like Facebook or Getter or Gab? Do all that stuff and help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk.
Your news, local and abroad.
It's the news from home and from overseas.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Doctors that were willing to prescribe ivermectin for COVID-19 were having trouble with their reputations and risking their license to practice medicine, all while patients were having trouble being able to fill their script at the pharmacy. And now the FDA is claiming in court that they never demanded people not to use the drug. Here to break it down is TNT news producer and show host John Matland. John, welcome to the show.
Love to be here, but Hesher, you are not a horse. You are not a cow. Seriously, y'all, stop it. This may sound familiar to you because it was a tweet from the FDA that went viral in the summer of 2021 as they warned everyone to stop taking ivermectin to treat their COVID-19 infections. Attached to said tweet is a webpage on why you should not proceed with taking the widely used and extremely safe medication. Well, now in a hearing for a case brought forth by three doctors, the FDA said they only suggested you stop. You didn't have to listen. It wasn't a demand, but simply a recommendation. Isaac Belfer, a lawyer, told the court, quote, "The cited statements were not directives. They were not mandatory. They were recommendations. They said, for example, why you should not take ivermectin to treat COVID-19. They did not say you may not do it. You must not do it. They did not say it's prohibited or it's unlawful. They also did not say that doctors may not prescribe ivermectin." Sounds like the science from the FDA is double talk con artist gibberish, if you ask me. The doctors claim the FDA illegally interfered with their ability to prescribe the medication. Ivermectin, of course, is approved by the FDA, just not for use in COVID-19, but as doctors do with many different medications, they were using it as off-label treatment. On another FDA webpage, the question says, quote, "Should I take ivermectin to prevent or treat COVID-19, end quote, with a listed answer saying, no, N-O. One of the plaintiffs, Dr. Paul Marek, began using ivermectin to treat his patients. His whole protocol in 2020 involved ivermectin, but after the FDA issued their statements, he was told to remove the protocol from the hospital due to the FDA's stance. He was forced to resign from his position because he could not prescribe ivermectin. The government has moved to dismiss the case on the grounds the plaintiffs lack standing and injuries cannot be linked to the FDA's stance on using ivermectin. It's all hearsay, essentially. So here in New York, then-governor, now disgraced ex-governor Cuomo, restricted pharmacies from dispensing chloroquine, hydrochloroquine, and other drugs relating to COVID-19, unless very specific criteria was met. Other states did similar things. So, Hesha, do you believe the FDA deserves amnesty?
the FDA deserves to be shut down or at least moved to Death Valley. They are absolutely terrible. Any lawyer that works for them should get a real job. They are, you're just basically a criminal crime boss if you're doing legal work on behalf of the FDA or any of these companies involved with this garbage. It's so funny to me, John, because ivermectin is FDA approved. It is safe and it is effective, and it might even be considered necessary for many things that it has been prescribed for a long, long, long time. Same with hydroxychloroquine right there. And of course, they can't make big money on those because it's an inexpensive off-brand solution. Yet the FDA continues to recommend remdesivir and these mRNA jabs and all these bivalent boosters and all this stuff, and none of that, they're not allowed to have any of that approved at the same level that ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine have been approved at, right? Because those are long-standing things that have a long track record. And if the Senate, this is the other thing that gets me, if the Senate had their way right now, they would be ending the emergency use authorization, which would make it such that the FDA can no longer recommend remdesivir and mRNA jabs. But Biden is looking to potentially veto that decision. So, yeah, it's just like, how dumb do you have to be to not see the back scratching here and the
cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, it is, because when I've had this conversation, so I'll fully disclose it. I know that ivermectin is a very safe drug, so I took it when I had COVID. And the whole entire premise is I had a conversation with somebody while I was campaigning, going door to door here on Staten Island, and they said, I would never vote for somebody on the side of the Republicans because they're crazy. Like, you don't believe that you should take ivermectin, do you? And I said, well, I did take it. And she goes, oh, you have to be crazy then. And look what the FDA said. So, I mean, this is a widespread thing. And then I asked her if she knew how safe ivermectin is. She goes, well, I wouldn't take it. She goes, well, it is a part of my skin medication. And I looked at her and I'm like, you're telling me you take ivermectin? Like, you know, but they don't understand. They don't get it. They don't understand that there's off-label prescriptions. Something, you know, if you're in the healthcare field at all, is like some women are prescribed Flomax, which is a prostate medication for urination. Urologists use it as an off-label treatment for women that have bladder issues. So there is so much that is actually done off-label, and because it was in focus and thrown on the media nightly, and the government said, you're not a horse, y'all. And then CNN put a green filter over Joe Rogan's face when he took ivermectin, and they said, he doesn't look really good. Joe Rogan was back in the gym in like 72 hours lifting plates. So, I mean, this is a very strange game of propaganda. And now, as the science emerges, they're trying to play that plausible deniability. Oh, we simply said the same way. If you recall, when Governor Cuomo said about the masks, he said, I can't have you wear a mask. All I can do is suggest it. You put it on because you knew it was the right thing to do, because none of this has ever been real. It's never been a realistic legal action to say everyone has to wear masks. Everyone has to do this. But these government officials have said it. And then when they realize that people know, they go, I was just suggesting it.
Just a suggestion. Maybe they are starting to realize, you know, there's a lot of CYA happening here lately with the whole COVIDian cult. And, you know, the information is out there now. Like, people, and they just keep shooting themselves in the foot, you know, kicking a dead horse, to use a pun here for our horse deworming medication talk. And that was an interesting angle they took there. Oh, it's veterinary medicine. There are tons of medicines that are used across veterinary purposes and human medicine purposes. So, like, that's just on its face a stupid one, but a lot of people bought into that. And then, like, I guess that means they must think that remdesivir is great, and remdesivir has a history as, you know, benign as ivermectin and successful as ivermectin. Well, actually, it doesn't. Remdesivir has a massive failure rate. I mean, the LD50, the lethal dose of remdesivir, as far as experience for people, it's almost like you could flip a coin to decide if you're going to survive remdesivir and the other things. And of course, the hospitals and the doctors, they get massive payouts. They get cash bonuses for hooking people up with remdesivir.
Yeah, at the end of all of this, when we get to look back through the history books, whether it's in our lifetimes or not, it's going to be the sloppiest, ridiculous, propaganda-ridden, scienceless garbage of all time. And you remember, back to the horse situation, when they were pushing this out, telling people on Twitter that they're not horses, and the left echo chamber tweeted it everywhere, there became anger towards people that just wanted to use the medication. And then you would turn on your TV and the media said the hysteria now is horse medication. So let's focus on that. And they had people in front of ERs going, there's the beds are being taken up by all the people overdosing on ivermectin, the horse medication. And then you go to find out that two people were in like the week were seen for overdosing on ivermectin. So, I mean, they acted like the walls of the hospital were going to collapse across the country from all of these horses running into the ER, and it wasn't real yet again.
Yeah, so much of that. And why is it we always have, it's always like 2 years, okay? It's like the most scandalous, salacious, stupid propaganda comes out that literally leads to the death of unknown amounts of people, and taking away a health option from maybe millions of people. And 2 years later, we get this little softball pitch like, oh, I wasn't really trying. I wasn't being coercive. You know, we weren't systemically trying to browbeat people into taking these dangerous experimental medications over these ones that are, you know, relatively safe and benign. No. We're just making suggestions.
Yeah, just a simple recommendation. And you guys misunderstood. And at the end of the day, there was I'm so out there with the public, I could care less. I had COVID twice, and it was in December, at the end of December last year, and then the first week of May this year. And when I had it again, I would have never known, besides some subtle eye pain that was similar to when I had COVID in December, which was much worse. But I went and I looked, they said, I just had a feeling, said, how did my antibodies come back so low after having the infection? And Hesher, there's actually studies out there that if you take ivermectin, it works so well that it does not create a serum antibody response the way it does if you don't, which means is why I got it again and so lightly, is because I didn't have robust, antibodies because I did take ivermectin, which means I could have essentially been a lot sicker had I not, but thankfully we'll never know. And now I have antibodies of gold.
All right. You got the golden ticket, my friend, antibodies of gold. All right. Excellent. Thank you, John.
I will see you tomorrow, brother.
All right. Looking forward to it, my man. That's John Matlin, everybody. Check him out here on TNT. John Matlin's show is available for you up there at the episodes and in the show host. Get on over there, find out all the information you need. Make sure you're set up for those automatic downloads. All right. Well, what do you guys think out there? Let us know. Have a conversation with us on the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room, tntradio.live. Your opinion matters at today's News Talk, and we'll be right back.
TNT Radio's Jason Olborn.
U.S. President Joe Biden has convened an emergency meeting among NATO and allied leaders after a deadly blast rocked a Polish border town near Ukraine, vowing to assist an investigation into the incident. It's quite a concerning development. Some people have been saying Russia did it. We've got all sorts of different stories at this stage. It's not clear exactly what's going on, but these are the kinds of incidents, and I don't expect that this will be the one. I expect there will be more, but these are the kinds of incidents which will be building up and building up, and it's designed to get into the minds of the population in the Western countries that Russia's all the bad people, and be very afraid of the Russians. And that's the kind of sentiment that they want in the NATO side, for the Western population to think like that, that Russia might have done it. It's a typical sort of a false flag operation.
Jason Olborn and Jason Q. Citizen on TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Silence for thinking differently? Silence for thinking differently. Not here. Silence for asking questions? Not here. Not here. Silence for discussing the other side of the story? Not on TNT Radio. Join the conversation anytime. Search TNT Radio on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Getter, or Gab. Download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Let me say hello to CeCe Woods from thecurrentreport.com. CeCe, welcome to the show. Good to see you in the second hour.
Happy Monday, Hesher.
Yeah, definitely. Happy Monday. All right. We've got a special guest with us. We've got Moses Castillo rejoining the show. Folks, you probably remember Moses. He's got over 30 years of decorated detective work with the Los Angeles Police Department, and he's got a rich career in law enforcement, and also works as a chief investigator for the Dordulian Law Group. Did I pronounce that right? And is that still a current gig of yours there, Moses? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Brian. Nice to see you. Yes, thank you for having me. That's correct. I work as their resident detective. It's a personal injury law firm that specializes in fighting for victims of sexual assault and childhood sex abuse.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Well, very pleased to have you here with us. Welcome back to the show. It's great to see you again. CeCe, so we got a number of things that we could talk with Moses about. What do you think? Where should we? What's a good starting point? Get us, throw the first hot potato out.
Well, let's just start with the most important story, I think. And good morning, Moses.
Morning.
I believe we need to start with the narrative that is being driven by local media in the mass casualty event with the LASD recruits. It's starting to look extremely contrived, very strategic. The lawyer that is representing this young man who literally mowed down 25 recruits, I believe, is associated with Mark Garagos and his law firm. She's a huge Gascon fan, like over the top, huge.
Yes.
Gascon fan. Very public about it. Pushed him to become elected. Also close with Tiffany Blacknell. Is that her name? Yes.
Yes.
Another giant red flag. I will be writing a story about this, but I wanted to bring on Moses right away. And because it's really disturbing. Most of us think that this kid is going to get off, period. And I'm going to get Moses's take on this. We're going to get Moses's take on this. Not only is he going to get off, but, you know, there's at least one recruit that's in grave condition. This kid will most likely not make it. I mean, I hope, knock on wood, that he does, but it's a really bad situation right now. The charges have not been filed. Why is there a narrative being created with the press? Why are they inserting themselves? Why is this even happening? And right. I mean, I totally understand him lawyering up. Totally get it. Okay, because this is a big deal. But you know, it's starting to look extremely disturbing. So Moses, can you weigh in on that?
Yeah. First of all, I just want to say that we are deeply saddened to hear about the conditions of these recruits. The mm-hmm. the sheriff reported that five are still in critical, one gravely ill. Mm-hmm. And I know one personally. I've been speaking to this recruit's wife and getting some personal information out there. You know, it was her birthday over the weekend on the day that her husband's in the hospital, mm-hmm. yet having I think a third or a surgery, and it's just awful all the way around. So our thoughts and prayers continue to be with the recruits and their families, and we hope that. You know, I want them to know that they are not alone. So thank you for bringing attention to this. Now, as far as the facts of the case, I could tell you this, that the investigators had not presented the case to the DA's office yet. So before they even had the opportunity to do that, you know, they released this individual. Now, just I want to remind your listeners that when someone gets arrested, it's they get arrested based on probable cause oftentimes. And then that probable cause, it makes the detectives present a case within 48 hours to the DA's office before they could present them to a judge for arraignment. And in this case, the investigators realized that they were not going to meet that deadline, so they went ahead and released them. At the moment they realized that they were not going to meet that deadline, they released them, and it was kind of a weird hour, if you will, but it was the right call, because anytime after that, that once they realize that they're not going to have enough, and if they hold him longer, they would have been accused of unlawful detention from that point forward. So they did the right thing as releasing them the night before around 10 o'clock at night or so. And so that's where we're at. So the investigators have not concluded their investigation. They have over 75 witnesses to interview. They have video footage to analyze and potentially even do a full examination of the vehicle itself, the vehicle that was driven, and look at the data. Every vehicle after 2012 has this recording device, like, you know, airplanes have their black box, if you will. Mm-hmm. Now vehicles have the same. So they want to review that data, that analyze it to figure out what was the speed before and during the actual collision. Because when you look at that one video that's been blasted all over the media, social media, it clearly shows that this guy is going straight at him. It's not even.
Yeah.
So it's just awful.
What's the kid's excuse? What's his excuse? Well, I fell asleep at the wheel. I mean, come on.
I guess we're going to find out, because the news report that you're alluding to, there's been NBC, the local NBC LA news station is going to hold its exclusive interview, and it's going to air tonight at 11 p.m. on Channel 4. So it'd be interesting. So they already showed some promos. Now, when you look at the promos and his image is there, and you compare it to the images at the scene, to me, it looks different. He looks a lot more beaten up at his promo and in the interviews than he did when he was being questioned by the CHP officers at the scene. So I'll let the you know, the viewers and the listeners make their own judgment here, but it almost sounds like this is all, like you said, orchestrated to sound a narrative to make him sound more like the victim here and not the suspect. And so we'll see. But you know, these are very challenging cases, very complex cases. At the very least, you have assault a deadly weapon with the vehicle at a minimum. Maybe we can't prove intent to kill, but you do have that. And unfortunately, if somebody does not survive then you have the you can move forward with vehicular manslaughter. You can move you could consider simple gross negligence, which would make that vehicular manslaughter a misdemeanor, or you could consider a gross criminal negligence, and that would make that vehicular manslaughter a felony. So there are so different options. I think that's another reason why they pushed pause on the investigation, because one of the recruits may not survive, and that just changes the outcome of what could be potentially charged. Because if they charge him prematurely and start the clock, if you will, for the criminal justice system to take its course, we don't want to start that prematurely if there's still outstanding evidence to be presented, to be analyzed. So we're also waiting for the toxicology report. I'm sure they took his blood specimen and maybe a urine sample, I don't know, but we're waiting to hear what exactly may have been in his system, if anything at all.
Sure, do you want to jump in?
Actually, let's. I do. I've been listening intently, and I got a couple questions. But let's take a quick headline with TNT, and we'll pick right up on the other side of a headline.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. A strong, shallow earthquake toppled buildings and collapsed walls on Indonesia's main island of Java on Monday, killing at least 56 and injuring hundreds. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin warned on Saturday that Russia's war in Ukraine could lead to a dangerous spiral of nuclear proliferation elsewhere in the world. New Zealand's Supreme Court has declared the current minimum voting age of 18 to be discriminatory, paving the way for the voting age to be lowered to 16.
For a complete list of shows and our schedule offered on TNT Radio,
simply visit our website at tntradio.live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction, truth from propaganda, keeping you in the loop on TNT Radio.
So let me get this straight, United States of America. You want to make it such that, well, many of you out there want to make it such that you have to be 21 years old to buy a gun. So we're going to shift that one to the right on the timeline of humanity. But then now they're saying they want you to be able to vote at 16. So what they're telling you there, folks, is that they want to set it up so that 16-year-old activist indoctrination victims from public schools can actually vote to take away your right to, well, do lots of things, probably violate your rights. So that's pretty interesting. That's fun. All right. So we've got Moses Castillo and CeCe Woods here with us. So let me recap for a moment here and just ask a quick question, and then I'll let Moses answer and CeCe feel free to jump in. So thanks for laying out the kind of the facts of the case there. I think it's important that that both you and Chief Pat Jordan have been on to sort of let the outrage out of the room a little bit at the fact that this guy has been let go. I understand now that this is a normal process. This is something that is set up to protect not only the victims, but the suspect, as well as the officers that are doing the investigation, because they're just not going to be able to provide their case within 48 hours. That makes sense to me. I understand that. 75 witnesses to interview, videos to analyze, computer data from the vehicle, and then all that stuff. So that's clearly not going to happen in 48 hours. Okay, so we set that aside. That helps with the context here. But we're still looking at this person being potentially charged with assault with a deadly weapon, a vehicle. We're still going to have to wait and see what comes out as far as intent, which may be or may not be hard to prove. So vehicular manslaughter is a potential. Some form of murder is potential also. And we still don't know if the people that are hurt the worst, at least the one guy you're talking about, is going to make it. We hope that he does. Is it Moses? But we're still hearing rumors and things like that. So is it too soon to speculate about anything, or are there some things happening here that you think deserve speculation? And are people have good reason to be asking questions about? Because I find this story understandable, but completely different from highly politicized stories like Paul Pelosi's story. And this new shooting that happened in Colorado Springs, it's like within minutes, we're seeing motives and all this stuff, and it's going to be a hate crime. And blah, 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 blah. It's just like, it's hard to square that circle when I see one case going that way and another incident going this way.
Well, I do want to say this. So we've been getting a lot of comments on our social media platforms on Instagram. There's a page known as Vintage Los Angeles Crime, and it's a huge law enforcement supportive platform. We're getting tons of messages, and I just got one that I want to share with you. This is from one of our followers, but also a prosecutor for within the DA's office there in LA County. And so it says, NBC did a real disservice to put the suspect on TV, give him a platform, and make him out to be the victim when one of the LASD cadets is fighting for his life. NBC also failed to clearly state that the suspect's attorney is friends with George Gascon and gave money and organized a fundraiser for his election campaign. And that is what's concerning many people, is that as soon as they learn the connection with this private defense attorney and George Gascon's office, and George Gascon in particular, it creates a huge, huge red flag. Because, you know, George Gascon, when he was running for office and even after he got elected, he kept saying that no person running for the office of the DA's office should be able to collect money from police unions, and because there's a conflict of interest, because then you're not going to prosecute police officers or investigate police misconduct. But here we have a case where he's clearly receiving money from defense attorneys, private defense attorneys, and now here we are creating a huge conflict of interest. In my opinion, I believe that if Gascon wants to be fair with this, he needs to recuse himself from this office, from this investigation, and hand it over to the California Department of Justice to take away if this defense attorney is going to be on the case. Because clearly, if you look at her tweets, if you look at her announcements, she is, you know, she loves Gascon, and she promoted him. She, right.
Major bias.
So, I mean, and we know about the, you know, the backdoor deals that were going on during the recall efforts, you know, the murder suspect that was getting a 7-year backdoor deal and all this other stuff. So, yeah. So, again, it's creating a huge concern about being fair. Now, I want this to be fair on both sides, because ultimately when you're fair to both sides, there's justice served for the victims. When you're do something improper that could jeopardize the investigation, then ultimately the one who suffers mostly is the victim for not getting justice. So I want to make sure that people understand that. All I'm saying with this is that this is creating a huge red flag. Mm-hmm. And now that, you know, this is somebody that one of our followers and a prosecutor made that statement. And I think that's a very bold statement to make against Gascon and his office and the attorney and NBC for giving this person a platform. Because commonly, you know, attorneys will tell their clients not to say a word. I mean, so this okay. is like,
hold the phone. Okay. Interesting that you say that. And look who's behind this. Garagos. What is Garagos known for? Creating a really good narrative for his clients with the media. He's known for that. So the fact that this high powered law firm jumped in the way they did before any potential charges were even truly filed. This kid has not been rearrested. I mean, it's red flags everywhere. Now, what about this kid's law enforcement ties with his family? That's another concern, and more so because it just kind of muddies the waters. You know, I mean, here it looks like this, they're trying to create the narrative to get this kid off from what he did, because he potentially, you know, could be held accountable for manslaughter and or reckless endangerment, whatever those charges might be, for hurting officers. But yet he has law enforcement ties. So it's just so strange, the whole situation. But aren't you hearing the same thing that I'm hearing, that there was bullying going on to either him or his family members? I mean, it's still unclear to me. So Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I'm not sure as to the bullying issues. I haven't heard any of that. But what I did hear from someone who I consider a reliable source is that this kid's father is a retired correctional officer from the California Department of Correction. And I believe that's the connection to law enforcement. So again, but to me, I'm just more concerned about the facts as we know. We know that there's a video that shows this vehicle going straight at the recruits when they're running on the wrong side of the street. There is no intent to brake. There are no skid marks. All those are factors. I mean, people want to give him the benefit of the doubt. I've heard stories that maybe he was reaching for his cell phone, maybe he dropped it, or just making up some, different reasons. Ultimately, this is going to be a very complex case right off the bat. I mean, if you want to prove attempt murder, I think the only way you're going to be able to prove it is through a confession. And I don't think we're going to get that here. So I think we're going to have to just go wherever the facts lead us, wherever the evidence lead us, and then charge appropriately. And again, there's so many evidence, so many items to analyze, still to go through, that we probably won't know this for weeks to come.
But he's probably going to be held civilly liable. Like, I mean, 25 of them were injured. They can definitely take him to the cleaners, correct?
Well, yeah, there is some, obviously civil litigation here potentially, but, ultimately he's the one that's the driver, and depending on the insurance coverage, and typically, people have very minimal coverage. So I don't think there's going to be enough coverage to cover all this damage that was done to these recruits. And so that's going to be very hard. But yeah, there is some civil litigation that I'm pretty sure will be coming. And but there's so many people involved that everybody's going to get maybe very little piece of the pie, if you know what I mean. It's just the cost is enormous. The loss is enormous. So I don't think there's anybody that carries enough insurance policy to cover this.
No, I agree with you. One more question before sorry to take over the convo, Hesher.
That's all right.
But I have an important question. So why do you think a high powered attorney was brought in on this case? Why do you think they lawyered up so fast with a high powered attorney and started to create this, narrative in the media?
Well, it's my first, I'm hearing it from you first about Mark Garagos. I'm not sure if Mark Garagos is on the case, but I know that.
Oh, he's tied. They're very close. And I think she is with his law firm. I'll find out for sure. But I know he's part of the equation. Let's just put it that way. Connection or whatever. Yeah.
Right. So Alexandria Kazazian is an attorney. She has an office out of Whittier. Again, it's my experience that most defense attorneys tell their clients to not say a word, because anything they say can use against them later in any kind of formal court appearance. So I'm really shocked that they're taking this approach. But to make him look like the victim is just trying to, impact and influence the public jury pool out there, or the jury pool that one day may be called to, listen to this case and hear and make judgment on this case. I think that's part of the attempt. They want to change the narrative, but it's really upsetting many, many people. I can tell you that it's going to backfire. I think NBC should consider doing both sides. And I could help them facilitate getting a family on there if they want.
Hesher?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious. So, okay. Which department is heading up the investigation? Is it still CHP or has it been handed off? Do you guys know?
So LASD, right?
Yeah. Well, CHP is taking the lead in the investigation as a whole, but also primary is the collision itself. They investigate that, and they are being assisted by LASD Homicide Bureau, which has very well intelligent, seasoned detectives, and they're doing what they can to assist, like doing the interviews, collecting the evidence and data. But the lead investigation from the lead agency for what I'm hearing is the California Highway Patrol.
Okay. Interesting. So as far as, I mean, it sounds like it's a massive effort, right? It's going to be a massive effort. It's going to involve a lot of people to do all the interviews, to, you know, collect all the information that they need. And I assume that since this was a potentially an egregious attack on their own, essentially, you know, their recruits, that there are people highly invested in making sure that this is a tight investigation, that they have all the facts that they need, and that they will be able to present something to the DA that they feel will lead to an appropriate legal and just outcome. Within those groups of people that are doing that right now, Alex, I may have to skip this break, I'm sorry, but is there a concern? Do you think that there is a concern that their hard work may not lead to the outcome that they would think is normal or just or something like that because of all these relationships and, you know, this deal with the lawyer here? I mean, clearly this person has been or just has access, because of who he is, who he knows, access to a bit of a, I don't know, could I call this a celebrity law firm, or at least a prestigious law firm? And they're willing to have him go out there and say, you know, make public statements. So do you think there's a growing concern amongst the people handling the case that want to see this go properly, that something could go wrong because of media treatment and the way that these lawyers are acting and the various relationships that could be conflicts of interest?
Well, absolutely. I do believe there are generally fear and concerns that the outcome may be tainted because of the relationship between the defense attorney and George Gascon in particular. But I'm going to tell you something else. If the evidence shows that these recruits were targeted because they were recruits and because they were in law enforcement, I pray and hope that they charge enhancement of hate crime, because, you know, if this had been any other specialized or special group, they would have been asking for that as well. You know, if it was somebody attacked because of their race, color of their skin, or faith, or, you know, religion, if they were attacked for those purposes, that would make it an automatic hate crime enhancement. And that goes to show you that, I know it's a different topic, but the war against law enforcement is real in our country.
100%.
And this is just an example of it. It just goes to show you how much hatred, because there's some people on social media that are calling this guy a hero.
Yes.
It just blows my mind that they're calling him a hero. And why? Because he was able to take out these people and prevent them from becoming deputy gangs. And I mean, that's the nerd that's being spin out there. It just,
but even
makes me
worse,
sick.
I'm sorry, Moses, to interrupt, but even worse. And yes, I'm with you, you know, like Pat, the chief Jordan, he's a regular on the show, and, you know, he's a good friend, as are you. Right. So when I watch this, it is especially concerning to me. Look, there are good and bad in every single walk of life, period. Every single job you have, doctors, lawyers, it doesn't matter. There's good and bad in every one of them. I say this all the time. I have nothing but the utmost respect for law enforcement. I do. I really do. I have to call them out every once in a while, but ultimately I'm hugely supportive. Okay. So what is most concerning about this is that the interview, from what I understand, and the narrative that is being put out there, is that he has this young man has no animosity toward law enforcement. That's number one. Will we find out? We'll see. But even more concerning is the relationship between the lawyer and also Tiffany Blacknell, who is, I believe, Gascon's chief of staff, and she is a public cop hater, period. So the influence of her and Gascon, which you know he's not going to add any enhancements. If this kid gets charged, he's not going to put enhancements on there. I'll be shocked if this kid actually does get charged, honestly. I mean, look at the type of people he lets walk the streets, right? So the relationships that I see in that little pool of people is extremely concerning, and how fast they lawyered up and how fast mainstream media is jumping to give them a platform to speak. I mean, I really am shocked.
Well, it is ratings month sweeps, so not surprised.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. This is just really stinking on every level. But Hesher?
Well, it's just absolutely amazing. You know, I cannot help but compare a story like this to another story like the Colorado Springs shooting. It's just like the moment it happens. Oh, and same with Pelosi. We got first, middle, last name, like right away. We had to wait days to get this one. We got a potential motive right away, even though they have no basis for that motive. You know, in the Colorado Springs shooting, they're saying it's a hate crime, but they're, you know, and I assume it's a similar sort of setup there in Colorado Springs, where the DA over there is probably just letting all kinds of people walk, mm-hmm. and then boom, you get this one where it's going to be highly politicized. It's going along right with this this new LGBT day of remembrance of like violence that trans people have experienced, and it's just like, oh, that's a great coincidence to go along with this event. Let's see, I've never heard of this holiday before, or this, you know, hashtag current thing, but there it is, and it's making the rounds, and you've got, you know, DAs willing to say, oh, this, we're investigating this as a hate crime. And it's like, well, what about, you know, it, like Lori Lightfoot, for example. We were talking about this earlier in the show. Perfect example. She'll come out and condemn, oh, this is terrible, what's happened there, those five people that were shot in Colorado Springs, it's the worst thing ever, stand with the LGBTQ, blah blah. And it's like, lady, 600 people died in your city every weekend, pretty much. It's like a complete war zone. Yes. Holocaust happening there, you know? So it's like, the whole politicized nature of all this is, as I find, very disturbing when you compare the media presentation of these cases.
Yeah, Brian, you're right. You know, I would love to see the mayor of Los Angeles, the DA of Los Angeles, the head prosecutors, the chiefs of police, all come together and have a press conference and announce that enough is enough. If you're going to attack any of our police officers or kill people, we're going to come after you. We're going to apply California law to the fullest extent. I would love to see that, because I would send a clamor, but you know what? It's not going to happen. It's more popular to advocate for criminals and those accused of crimes than it is for victims. And that's really sad. We're in California here, and not only California, but it's known as the criminal's paradise. And so it's really sad, sad commentary.
I have a side note on actually what's going on with the transition from Sheriff Villanueva to Sheriff-elect Luna. What are you hearing about Parra? I'm hearing he's going to end up being undersheriff. And the reason why I say that is because we've had Michael Gates on here, who is the city attorney, you know, over in Huntington Beach. He has been on the show a few times, and we will have him on again. He's the chief of police over in Huntington Beach, and now he is part of Luna's transition team. And normally you don't do that unless you're going to be given a coveted position. But I could be wrong, but I'm just kind of saying.
Well, I believe Chief Parra has experience with the LA County Sheriff's Department. I believe he was a... Yep. Deputy Sheriff. So I think he will have a better knowledge of the ins and outs of the department than Luna yep. would. So Luna is bringing in people to help him look good. And I think that's what we're doing. That's what we're seeing here.
Sorry, Brian. I had to slide that one in there.
No, that's okay. That's okay. We're down to 1 minute left in this hour. You're welcome to hang with us into the next hour if you want, Moses. But if you got to go, we understand. I know you kind of had this hour booked out for you, but you're welcome to hang if you want to. Yeah, we could talk Weinstein a little bit.
Yeah, you know what? I do got to go. I have to get ready for other appointments. But thank you so much for the opportunity. Anybody, please reach out to me at the Vintage Los Angeles Crime or at Detective Moses Castillo on Instagram. Send me messages. Show your support. I'll relay them to the families of the recruits. They need to know that they're not alone. And thank you for bringing awareness on this very important topic.
Thank you, Moses.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much, Moses. All right, folks, that's where you can get a hold of him. So if you got tips or well wishes, get on over there and reach out. We'll have Moses back on the show real soon to do a follow-up on this and talk about the Weinstein case and more. Stick with TNT. We'll be right back.